Welcome to the Voices in Recovery podcast. Voices in Recovery is produced by Freedom's Path Recovery Society, a registered Canadian charity. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider a donation at www.freedomspathrecoverysociety.ca. All donations go directly to assisting Freedom's Path and providing services free of charge and helps us keep the podcast going. We are grateful for any and all donations. This podcast discusses difficult topics such as childhood abuse, drug and alcohol use, sexuality, sexualized trauma, and more. If you are under the age of 18, please speak with your legal guardian prior to listening. The opinions expressed during the podcast are those of the individual and not those of Voices in Recovery or Freedom's Path Recovery Society. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the podcast.
This podcast is being recorded on the traditional land of the Blackfoot Confederacy. This consists of the Kainai, Piikani, Siksika, and the Blackfeet in the U.S. We acknowledge the Stoney Nakoda, which consists of the Bearspaw, Morley, and Chiniki. We acknowledge the Tsuut'ina who are Dene, and the Métis Inuit status and non-status from all of Turtle Island, and those who are visiting. We are all treaty people.
Okay, and now action.
I had reflected on reading the emotional survival and law enforcement book when I was in recruit class. It's a little bit cheesy. So like reading it then I was kind of like, well, like I see the point they're like trying to convey, but I had always felt like I was somebody that was like pretty on top of my mental health, at least since I was like in my 20s. Right. Yeah. So to me, it was just kind of like, well, if you just keep on top of it, this like 5 to 8 year wall that they talk about just shouldn't be a problem. But it was like almost on my 5 year anniversary exactly that,
really,
that happened.
Hey?
Yeah. So wow. I think it just speaks to the being hyper vigilant all the time and then like struggling to turn that off. And part of it too is I didn't learn that from law enforcement. I learned that from being like a victim of a crime, right? Mm-hmm. Like early on in my life, I've always been pretty hypervigilant.
Some of us never get to turn it off no matter what.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it just gets heightened then when you're in a police car driving around. And I mean, at any moment, like you could get into a shooting or whatever. And then you have to be paying attention to like the computer and the radio and the stuff around you while you're driving. And people calling you, like there's it really takes multitasking to the next level.
I think that in itself though is like important to tell people because they don't understand, like
no,
they're like most of the time when someone's driving they're doing four things.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
at least
pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
I mean the public gets frustrated and I've had people like yell at me before for like being on the computer and stuff, but it's like I'm not just hanging out on my computer.
Yeah.
It's like
you're not looking at Facebook.
Like you're getting updates about calls you're going to and stuff, and like just because you're not responding with your lights and sirens to a call doesn't mean you're not on your way to one. And different types of calls determine like different responses. And I mean, I could be driving what looks like normally to a call that is still like a bigger deal call. Maybe I'm just waiting for more information to come in, or maybe there's another unit, enough units at scene that I don't have to like drive lights and sirens there, but that, it doesn't mean that I'm just like hanging out. So, it's like your whole 12 hour shift is this crazy multitasking, hypervigilance. And when you go home at the end of the day, it just is hard to, unwind. And then I was finding too, like you would almost have that sense of getting like switched on, if you will, for the entire work week. And then for your 2 days, two nights, you're just kind of like up at like 90% the whole time. And then it talks about this in the book too, like just crashing on your days off. And I ended up feeling probably for the like 2 years before I went off on my like brief leave that I was just kind of a zombie. And so like that wasn't great for my home life either, right? Or my quality of life, because I was just so tired from all the energy I was putting into basically to survive the work week, mentally or physically, like however you want to look at that. So yeah, it definitely takes a toll after a while. And then just the shift work takes a toll too. Mm-hmm. Like it's said to be a carcinogen.
Yeah, so. I know for sure it is, right? And so like in your estimation, this is an estimation, right? Mm-hmm. Like how many people do you think are off at any given time on stress leave? Like I estimate it between 300 and 500. Modified duties potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to identify the service that I work for, and it depends if you work for a big agency or a smaller agency, but I guess if we're looking at it like percentage wise, I would say that, oh man.
Maybe 10% of the workforce?
Oh, more than that. Yeah. I was going to say like 25 maybe.
Okay. I was going to go high, but I didn't want to you know, just bludgeon them to death. But
yeah, and some of it is like short-term leaves, and it's pretty common in law enforcement to, at some point in your career, take a short-term leave. But yeah, then there's also people that are on modified duties, either for like a psychological injury or a physical injury. So.
And see, and the public definitely doesn't know that.
No.
Right? Definitely doesn't. Doesn't know that about the RCMP, about the sheriffs, about police.
Even like other police officers don't understand the like psychological injury or sometimes the physical injuries. They'll just look at people and be like, well, they look okay. Why aren't they out in a uniform taking calls?
Yeah.
And it's so much more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then within the culture, it becomes even more complicated because then you have people who call folks who are on leave. Like I've heard this in many different agencies. Broken toys, right?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And once you start calling people broken toys, like, that's where that culture becomes, I think, extra toxic, right?
I agree. I have a sociology degree, so thinking about it in terms of, like, labeling theory, and, I mean, I just have an undergrad, so by no way an expert in this, but yeah, like, once that label is attached to someone or, like, a group of people, it becomes... It can become part of their identity too, as like a survival thing to just joke about the broken toys thing so that the other people almost treat them with respect. Like it's so backwards.
Yeah.
And then the folks.
Well, yeah, because you got to pull your bootstraps up.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely a dog eat dog world.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't support each other enough. I used to hear it all the time, like when I was new, and I thought it was more like the old culture. Of like we eat our own, but that very much is prevalent today.
Is it even like, I was only there for a bit before I left, for a few years. Is it better now? I felt like it was worse, like when I left.
Is it better now? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the thing. I can't speak to what it was like before because I didn't work there. I've worked for whatever, a handful of years. So. Mm-hmm. The thing, well, and I guess I was a civilian employee before.
And when that, I say work there, I just mean when I was associated with an agency, because obviously I wasn't like an actual employee.
Yeah, no, so, I get that. Yeah. And I guess I've been a sworn officer for a handful of time, but I was a civilian employee before that as well. Mm. So I guess I have worked in / around law enforcement longer than I was about to give myself credit for. But I don't think that it is better. I think that they pretend it's better, and that probably does make it worse.
Yeah.
That's
what I noticed.
Like, I just have, and I don't want to give the specific examples again, cause I don't want to like out myself or anybody else, but like being a female in the male dominated field, like I had ideas about what that would be like going into it. So I wasn't like blind to it, but, I had just like always been a tomboy and stuff. And I was like, oh, like I'm used to like working around men or like playing like masculine sports and stuff. Like I just didn't have any issues with working in a male dominated field with the idea of it. The problem that I've seen is because of the increased accountability that police officers have in terms of how they treat members of the public now, with everyone having a camera and us recording everything on our body worn cameras and whatnot, my theory is that as a result of that increased pressure, the way people treat people internally has gotten worse. So therefore, I see a lot of female officers getting victimized by other male officers. And I, again, can only speak from like my perspective. So it probably happens for like people of color and whatnot as well, like those different like intersectional like points, right? So with the women, what I find is there seems to be an attitude with the male officers around the like 3 to 5 year mark where they start to think they're kind of untouchable. So again, treating the public not good isn't okay anymore. And I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but
of course
it's just,
but it used to be more acceptable.
It was way more acceptable before, when nothing was recorded and whatnot. So the public's demanding way more. So people for the most part have adapted to that in terms of their interactions with folks outside of their agency or whatnot. But yeah, internally, it's like whatever it is that drives that is still there. And like I was just talking about, it's kind of the 3 to 5 year mark where people start being like, okay, so what happens is there's an element of like grooming the female officers, and it does end in sexual assaults often.
I will say often.
Lots of sexual harassment, but the sexual assaults have gotten out of control. And so that's the thing, is like, I can't speak to whether or not that was happening before or not, but I know it's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And I have a few theories about it. One of the things I think drives it a bit is once some of these folks are getting that sense of superiority or like whatever it is, they appear to be quite threatened by like competent female officers, right? And an easy way to assert your power and dominance is to sexually assault somebody, right?
And highly sexualize them, first of all. 100%,
yeah. So I find that there ends up being then three groups of women, and this is like overly generalizing it, obviously.
Of course.
There's the women who like really reinforce the boys' club, and they become like bullies to other women, and it's a way to protect themselves so that they don't end up the victims, right?
Of a sex assault, yeah.
Exactly. Or so that they can just survive working on the street or like whatever work area they're in, right? There's the women who just like won't take it, and then will help like stand up for themselves and like support other women and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's the women that just become highly sexualized. I think it's a survival thing as well. Like I don't
judge, it very much is.
I don't judge any of the groups of people, because everyone's just trying to get like through it and survive. Right?
Trying to survive a field of work that has never appreciated the female presence.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah,
like it never has. And it's like when you talk about those different types of, and of course it's highly generalized, but it does, but it's also close. Like it's very close, right? Like there's probably more categories than we could think of, but.
And I mean, like no human being is just going to fit in one category either, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the truth is, I have witnessed, and I won't say names or anything like that, but of course, but I've witnessed like, when female officers leave the room, the conversation changes.
100% it does, yeah.
And when they come back in, it changes again, right? Unless it's one of those folks who are part of it, have made themselves a part of it to be safe, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And I get that, because I mean, I was a in the closet queer for most of my life, right? Yeah. So hiding to survive is, that's right up my alley, right? Like, and I'll never begrudge anyone for that, because you, I couldn't imagine what it's like for a woman to go into law enforcement to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like, I just can't imagine it. Like, the mindset you have to have going in is probably 10 times more diligent than what mine would have to be if I was straight.
I thought I was really diligent going into it.
I think you are.
And it's just worse than I expected. Like, I haven't been a victim of a sexual assault, but I've experienced a lot of sexual harassment, and I just find it's a way to put women in their place. Because I guess the way I see myself is I'm someone who's like relatively competent. I work hard. I, you know, like strive to do the best I can do, type of thing, right? And that it threatens people, and it's just such an easy thing to put me in my place to just call me like sexual names and stuff, right? Because then it's so deflating.
Well, and that shit must happen all the time.
All the time, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
I was going to say, you probably can't even keep track. You should get like a clicker to count how many times a day.
Yeah.
Although that would be fucking just
the thing
depressing.
Is, it happens more when you're new.
Mm-hmm.
It probably can continue to happen as well. And I don't think I'm like invincible from it now by any means, but with it being like a power dynamic thing, it's like, of course they want to do that to new people. It's easy, and they're kind of in a vulnerable situation as well.
Yeah.
So I'm not experiencing it as much these days, but But when I perceive that I have threatened somebody else, then it can come up again. Mm-hmm. So it's not ideal.
No.
It's like not a good work environment at all.
And so do you find that female officers are supportive of each other?
Well, that's the thing, is a third of them are maybe? Maybe.
Yeah.
And
again, the other ones probably want to avoid it somehow to.
Yeah. And again, like I don't blame those people,
nope,
but like,
not at all.
It's tough. Cause the female officers in the kind of boys club reinforcing mm-hmm. role can make it way worse for yeah. the women that are experiencing this.
Lateral violence can often be the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be heartbreaking.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So it gets sad to see that, but it takes so much courage and strength to stand up against it as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not saying that those that don't are like weak, because it's all just survival at the yep. end of the day is what we like keep coming back to.
Mm-hmm.
If more people were able to step out of their comfort zone a little bit, the culture might be able to shift a little mm-hmm. bit. And it is shifting, I would say. Again, I don't want to like name anything specific, but there are leaders within my organization that have identified that the culture is toxic and mm-hmm. are actively working to change it. The problem is they don't want to be pushy about it, because that's not how you make change. So it's like little.
It's not how you make change as a woman.
Yeah, right. It's little things mm-hmm. at a time, because, and exactly what you just said, it's the people in the privilege group that have to make the change if it's going to mm-hmm. be like a big change yeah. that happens more immediately, right?
So it's okay for men to bully their way around to get yeah. what they need to make the change they want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but women cannot do that. People definitely of color not. Can't do that.
Yep.
Definitely
not in that organization.
No.
Or any organization. I'm thinking of the one that I worked for.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of, there's no way in that organization would that have worked. Right.
No.
It has to be like, and on top of that, to go back a bit when we were talking about the sexual assaults,
mm-hmm.
that in a short span of a few years, me working for that particular organization that I worked for, there were several reported by other officers.
It gets so complicated too, because once it's reported, and I don't think that the agency I work for, like previously, I don't think that they were dealing with those situations adequately. I have noticed a change in the last year, so I'm hopeful, but they weren't getting taken seriously at all. Plus then the union defends the aggressor, or the offender, however you want to look at it. Mm. If it's a criminal act or if it's a like a harassment or whatever, but yeah, the union defends those people, and then the victim is just left having no resources, plus mm-hmm. with the way those...
Even though the victim's in the same union.
Yeah, same union, yeah. And then the way that things are investigated, just with like the police act and stuff, is they're told that if they tell anybody that those people will be witness officers, mm-hmm. and so they basically shouldn't tell anybody. And it's like, what type of victim... how is that reasonable to not talk about what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you may have people outside of policing you can talk to, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's still, my understanding of it puts them in the like witness category, but that could be wrong. But mm-hmm. I believe as anyone you tell can be then interviewed as
potential.
Part of, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just, it sets up the victims to be in a situation where they feel like they can't talk about it.
Well, and they're alienated.
Consequences. Yeah.
And they're alienated from everything. Right?
Yep.
Like everyone that I've encountered, alienated from the service, mm-hmm. from their friends in the service, mm-hmm. because like there's still this weird culture, and it's not just within like different law enforcement or whatever organizations. It's actually like a part of our like rape culture, period.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Where we initially just go, how? You could never, he would never.
100%.
That's our initial response to a competent woman saying what happened.
I would always say any woman, like.
Yeah. I mean, a competent woman who's representing themselves, right?
Yeah, like, totally. But that is their response, is like, oh, like, no. Like,
it couldn't be him.
Yeah.
There's no way, right?
Yeah, totally.
And like, I get the idea of being, trying to be neutral, right? But like, you do have to listen to a fucking victim, though.
Yeah.
You have to.
You have to,
right? Like, just be like, okay, you tell the story, and then we'll, like, you tell the story, and whatever else needs to happen will happen,
mm-hmm.
right?
And
but it's just, we just have that response. It's like, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to ruin his life. Her life is not as valuable as his life.
So what I hear all the time within my organization is like, oh, we don't want to ruin his career. And it's like, okay, well, what about the woman that spoke
or the victim,
out
yeah.
against a situation where they were, you know, a victim of a potentially a criminal offense in some cases. It's happened enough. And then that person is not protected at all. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they're in situations where they have to work with the offender.
Yep.
And there's no workplace safety at all. Nope. The service does nothing to keep these people like psychologically safe in these situations. And the focus all the time is, well, we don't want to ruin his career.
Yep. It's always on the well, you said aggressor, but I'll say perpetrator.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll just call it what it is.
Yes.
Right. But you're right. It's just, it's 100% true. The initial response. And if that's the initial response of most like folks who can investigate these circumstances, if their initial response is, wait, we can't just believe her because it could hurt them. Like that's the problem. That's the problem where that initial response is, no, we need to like believe them first. Why? Like, why are we depicting this person? Obviously how they dress, all these things come into play when it becomes obvious that our system is not misogynistic anymore. Yeah. Sorry. What were we saying?
Like ruining his career versus hers, the society, or like the people investigating the sexual assaults. I haven't seen it as much on that side of it. Like when I've been dispatched to deal with a sexual assault call for service and there's been other officers involved, very rarely do I find that there's a lack of belief with the female reporting party.
Mm.
It does happen if it's not like a clear cut kind of sexual assault. And I say that like if somebody, and I suppose this podcast has a big trigger warning, which maybe you should.
We do. No, we'll put an extra one on this one.
Okay, great. Yeah, I like that. If there's been like a sexual assault with penetration, those are always taken like very seriously. Mm-hmm. And like no one is questioning anything. Even if some things don't add up, it's like, well, you take them to the shoe mirror and you get the
kit.
The kit and stuff. And it's done properly.
Yeah.
I find like the groping ones can be difficult, partly just because in court they're hard to prove and it can be more traumatizing to the victim in a case of a sexual assault that doesn't have clear-cut evidence to, like, if it's not going to get a conviction, then it's like, it may be counterproductive to even lay a charge because then having the victim cross-examined by a defense lawyer can be way more traumatizing than maybe even the assault was to start with.
Yeah.
So that's where I see it's like, and it can come across as that the victim's not being believed, but it's, and I'm not saying that.
No, I get it.
It doesn't happen, but.
Obviously there are instances where what actually happens is what can only happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Like I've been to them where like I believe the victim when they're talking to me, and then in my head I'm like, well, in court this is just going to be a disaster, and this person will be torn apart by a defense lawyer. And I,
well, because not everybody in that courtroom. That's when it starts to show.
Well, it's adversarial.
Yeah, our biases is. Show yeah. in our system in the system.
100%. Yeah. So then it's like I'm thinking of one in particular where I didn't lay a charge and then the victim lost it on me. And I was like, well, like I understand where she's coming from because she feels like I don't believe her, but I don't have enough evidence to lay a charge for one. And then for two, even if I did in this kind of gray area situation, it wouldn't be beneficial to the victim in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But well, and that's the discretion.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the discretion when maybe we take some discretion to be a little bit more like compassionate and realistic about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. It's like every one of those. And I'm thinking more about, again, the system itself, because I think within different agencies, the natural instinct is obviously to protect the what's always been the status quo, which is white men or men accused, like whoever's being accused of these crimes. Again, it's not to say that women cannot commit these crimes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because obviously women can.
It's happened.
Yeah, and it happens. And I'm sure maybe even within different law enforcement agencies it's happened with where women do it.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm speaking specifically of the experiences I've had mm-hmm. with, and the victims have all been female and the perpetrators all male, mm-hmm. right? And most of the perpetrators with more time on the job, more seniority. Yeah, and
that's usually how it is.
Right? And those things are so consistent that, like you said, I don't think up until maybe the last couple of years, because I have heard some like decent things, some changes there where maybe people are starting to believe
female officers. The last year, I think, it's gone a long way.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think before that, I think you're right. I don't think anyone, if they ever dealt with them, it was like they rolled some dice and said, okay, this is the best way to handle this. Like,
or just didn't deal with it.
Yeah, or just let it go. Yeah. Right? Because they didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Or they found a way not to deal with it, yeah. or whatever, and then the victims were just hung out to dry, basically.
Yeah.
And
or paid off or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like, it is so damaging to a woman's career to speak out against mm-hmm. this type of thing that no woman in her right mind would make up an allegation.
Yeah.
And then go through all of the career damaging stuff that happens. Nope. And I'm not saying a false report has never happened, but like, I believe these women that mm-hmm. are going out of their way to report these things and mm-hmm. then hold people accountable when they're not investigated properly, because that female is the one that is going to lose out on all these career opportunities. Mm-hmm. So if they're in a position where they're willing to report it and then follow it through and hold people accountable, it's because it's bad. Like, mm-hmm. and that person's been already significantly affected by it to the point where the idea of whatever it is that happens as a result of reporting it to damage their career is still better than the situation they're in presently without saying anything about it, right? Like, mm-hmm.
and that's got to be telling.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just in itself. Because, I mean, just uttering those words to someone else in any service, like, it's almost career suicide.
Oh, right? 100% it is. Yeah.
Right? And if it's not, like, considered that, like, we should probably have a category for that. Like, what are some career suicides when working in law enforcement? Telling people you're stressed out.
Yep.
Don't tell the doctors you're an alcoholic. Like, don't do these things.
I only laugh because of a specific mutual friend that we have.
But. Totally. Like, and don't ever tell people that, right? Like, don't tell people that unless if you're taking prescription pills, you're okay, right? You can do that.
I mean, that just speaks to our society too, which is wild. Like, a prescription pill fixes everything. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that and I don't agree with it at all.
No, I got you. Like, and it's so funny to watch, like, in law enforcement, what I've seen quite a bit of is that, like, oh, yeah, no, I got sore back. I'm like, oh, okay, like, what do you do for pain? Like, meditation? Oh, yeah, Percocets. And I'm mm-hmm. like, all day? Like, all day. Like, and so it was, I'm not going to lie to you, a little bit shocking. There is a lot of opiate use, like prescription, opiate use.
Yeah, a doctor's been like, here, take these pills for your back pain.
Yeah, and go out and drive this car really fast.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie to you, like,
oh, but you can't smoke weed before your shift.
No.
And I'm not advocating anyone go to work impaired.
I got you. Yeah.
Like, those drugs, to me, are much worse than a little bit of cannabis used for pain management or whatever. But well, again, responsibly.
Exactly. Well, everything responsible, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like there's nothing inherently wrong with taking your pain meds, right?
No.
Like, this is the whole point is that, but it's okay to take some that really impair you.
Yes.
Well, it's not okay to take others at all.
So I have a story. So the agency that I work for can set you up with a sleep clinic if you're having sleep issues, okay? Mm-hmm. So I thought I might have sleep apnea because I was, you know, I don't remember the last, but I'm better now because I figured out what the problem is. But like at this time, I would sleep for 4 hours or 12 hours and never feel rested. Mm-hmm. It was like there was nothing. I hadn't had a good night's sleep long before I was a police officer. It wasn't related to shift work. So somebody thought I might have sleep apnea. So I went to this clinic, and initially the first doctor saw, I was like, I don't think you have sleep apnea, but I'll give you this sleeping pill and then you can go see this other sleep doctor for like sleep behavior. Sleep behavior doctor's like, no, you don't have an issue here. Go back and do the sleep apnea testing and stuff, whatever. So anyways, I was given a different sleeping pill than what my like family doctor had me on. And I wasn't someone that took a sleeping pill often because I have like a history in my family and personally with addiction. Mm-hmm. So I try to be careful about taking anything that's mind altering, right? Mm-hmm. So I would take it basically to like reset my sleep cycle occasionally after working the like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. Anyways, the sleep doctor at this clinic put me on a different sleep med, and it just kind of seemed the same, whatever. I like, my usage didn't change, but then when I went on stress leave, my doctor said I had to go on an antidepressant, which like I didn't love either. Like she basically was like, I'm not giving you a doctor's note unless you are on an antidepressant. And I was like, that's wild, but okay, sure, I guess. I need the time off, so if you have to put me on a pharmaceutical drug, fine. So anyway, I started on this antidepressant, and then I didn't even think to mention to my family doctor that I was on a sleeping pill from this other doctor, probably because I just had so much going on.
Yeah.
So anyways, one day I take my sleeping pill to sleep, and then I wake up and I take my antidepressant in the morning. And now I'm starting to feel like super woozy, and I'm like, oh, this is weird. Like, I don't feel good at all. And then I realized that I like, maybe these drugs are having an interaction with each other, which I only thought of because of the training that I've received from my police agency on drug impairment in the realm of drug impaired driving. But anyways, I Googled my one sleep med, and it said specifically don't take with the antidepressant I was on. And I was like, oh, I know what's happening here. Yeah. Like, I'm basically drunk because there are two central nervous system depressants that are interacting with each other. So I was like, well, no wonder I'm like out of it. So I was like, well, I guess I just have to wait for this like pharmaceutical party that I didn't want to be invited to, like for that to wear off, you know? Like, so I'm like, okay, this, and I don't like feeling that way. So it was uncomfortable, but then at least I understood what was going on. Yeah. Anyways, I went to my doctor, the sleep doctor, for a follow-up appointment. And I was like, hey, I can't take this anymore because my doctor put me on a antidepressant. And he was like, oh no, you can still take it. And I was like, okay, well, like, I'm not a doctor, but the internet says no, and my personal experience was awful. And he was like, well, it's just personal, like, whatever. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not taking this anymore. And he was like, oh, I'll just write you a prescription for another one. And I was like, no, I think I'm okay, because my doctor told me the antidepressant has, like, a
mild sedative?
Yeah, like, it is supposed to help with sleep. So, which is probably why they didn't work well together. But anyways.
Or they worked really well together.
I mean, it depends what outcome you were looking for.
100%.
But that was not the outcome I was working for. It did work well, though.
Yeah.
if you wanted to be impaired.
Yes.
So.
Don't do that out there, by the way.
Yeah. So, anyway, I, and while I'm Googling it, too, I realized that the sleeping pill I was taking has a 17-hour half-life.
Ooh.
And so this is, that's obviously a problem. If I'm taking it before bed to get up at 4 in the morning to go to work for my day shift as a police officer, like, if it has a 17-hour half-life, it's still affecting me while I'm working. And a doctor that knows what I'm doing for, or sorry, knows what I do for a living and, like, works with my agency has prescribed me this pill. I was like, I don't like that. So anyway, when I told him I didn't want the pill anymore, he said he'd write me a prescription for another one. And I was like, no, like, I'm good. And then he faxed the prescription to my pharmacy and they called me and I didn't know. And he was like, they were like, hey, like, your prescription's ready for pickup. And I was like, this is wild. Like, these doctors, well, they get a like a pay for doing that, but it's so corrupt. But then our society is just so okay with it. And then other means of, whether it be pain management or, you know,
anxiety,
like,
management, depression, like, whatever it is.
Whatever it is frowned upon. And, like, circling back to, like, what you were saying about, like meditation and stuff. And, like, that's still seen as, it's more accepted these days, but it's still seen as, like, kind of, like, left-wing or, like, hokey or, like, oh, okay, meditation. Like, sure, that's working for you type of thing. But then it's just the Band-Aid solution to take all these pharmaceuticals. But that is where our like society is just like so fixated on is like the quick fix and the instant gratification and the let's just solve this now type of thing and not look at any underlying causes. And no wonder there's so much addiction in our society if that's like what we are subject to all the time, right?
Well, yeah, and within like any law enforcement service.
100%.
Right? Yeah. Like the rampant addiction and...
Well, and it's just, it's encouraged. Like
I was going to say that. It's encouraged and supported.
It is. Not so much in the last few years because there was enough instances of people drinking and driving from like work events that they had to look at it and they were like, okay, we can't support this quite as much now. But I mean, the culture in some work areas is still very much like have a drink at the end of the shift, like it's team building. But then, you know, some people just keep going because they don't have an off switch because they're already alcoholics, or they're trying to fit in with their teammates, or they witnessed something extremely traumatic that day and they don't know how to cope with it. So it's easy to just drink the pain away, right?
Yeah.
And so that is encouraged. And then the first few years I was on the job, like I haven't drank at all since I've been a police officer, but I would tell people I didn't drink and they would like think it was weird. Mm-hmm. But I have noticed a bit of a culture change because now more people are like, yeah, I don't drink either.
Yeah.
But I also think society is just kind of trending in that direction as well.
Mm-hmm. You can see it everywhere, like sober Januarys.
Yeah,
sober,
totally. That wasn't a thing years ago.
No.
But it is still like old school within a policing agency because of the like old white man having all the influence type of thing, right? Yep. So it is further behind society, I would say, and just like
it's even more in the dark ages.
Yeah. So as much as there's progress, like it's not where they want to think they are. Mm-hmm. And when I joined the police agency, I did like I had the impression that they were pretty good with like mental health care and like a better environment and stuff because they preach that.
Yeah.
But it's all just like virtue signaling.
Yeah. That's the word I was looking for as we were talking. The virtue signaling they do. Like, it's almost like the places that put the little rainbow up in their window, right?
Yeah.
It's like, please, like, you can come in here, queer people, and then you come in there and they treat you like shit, right? Like,
oh, 100%. Yeah. That's exactly what happens. It's like,
yeah,
this is a great place to work for women, invisible minorities.
Yeah.
We support each other and we've got so much, like, help for your mental health and stuff. Yeah. And then, yes, the agency I work for does have a pretty good situation in terms of like getting help like for a psychologist, like it's all paid for, and like, not every agency has that.
Mm-hmm.
However, even accessing that, there's so many hoops to jump through that anybody that's in crisis isn't going to be able to navigate it themselves.
Yeah.
Like, and the thing with cops is they don't ask for help until things are already too bad.
Yeah.
Like, because of the pride and the culture and the like, you don't want to look weak. And I mean, there's still lots of cops out there that like refer to a psychologist as like Dr. Bonkers or whatever, right? Like, the newer generation of police officers, not so much, but like the, I don't know, anyone.
I would say probably my age, like boomer, like Gen X kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very much frowned upon to get any sort of help. Actually, and again, I don't want to say anything specific, but there is a situation that didn't directly involve me, but involved all of my like close coworkers. And, excuse me, essentially my, a colleague, I'm just trying to think about this like a little bit cryptically, so I don't like give anything that's too detailed away. But okay, so I don't know that it was relevant to the situation, but they are a person of color, and they had been pretty vocal about a situation that was very stressful to them because they had lost a family member a year ago. Okay, and so they had taken a week off work, you know, as like an anniversary thing, so that they could spend time with their family. And you know, like grievances will come up on those anniversaries. So I thought that taking that time off work was a responsible thing to do and the best thing to do for that person's family life, right? And so they come back to work and the management is up in arms thinking this person's like not mentally stable because they had responsibly taken time off work. And then there was a big fallout. And again, like, I don't want to get anything too specific, but it showed to me, for sure, prejudice against mental health, but then I don't know if the person's, like, other factors, like being a visible minority was a factor at all. I mean, I think usually it is to some degree.
I would say yes. Just for how I know the system, I would say yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of built in, right?
It is. It is built in.
Yeah.
So that was really hard to watch.
I bet.
Because to me, I was like, this person is just taking care of themselves and their family, and, like, why is that?
They're doing what you preach every January when you do Bell Let's Talk.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. And then somebody in the service is like actively trying to like prevent this person from existing in the way they are. Like it's just wild to me. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it got really wild for me. That's why I had to leave where I was working. I just couldn't stay anymore. And a lot of it had to do with the virtue signaling, you know, like for example, everything was fine that I was queer until I painted my nails.
And that was the line, hey?
And that was, well, I saw it from the district I was working in, volunteering in, to the headquarters, to, of course, acutely, the chaplain section where I was working, right? And I don't mind talking about the agency I worked with.
Yeah.
Because, like, it is what it is, and it's toxic, right? Like, yeah. And the virtue signaling's there as it is with any other agency, law enforcement agency, or any agency trying to pretend like they give a shit. Right.
Yep.
While at the same time maintaining an attitude that shows us you don't give a shit. Right. Which is like very strange.
Yeah.
Because I did. I think I believed it for a little bit. And then once I painted my nails, like, and started showing up to volunteer, it was different.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that. I guess that was when things had changed for you. And that's something that should be so insignificant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. And that's unfortunate that you.
Yeah.
Experience that. But again, at the same time, if that's how you're getting treated, I wouldn't have stayed either.
Yeah. Right. And it was a matter of, I stayed probably, I think it was a year and a bit after I started painting my nails, I stayed. And it was just slowly getting me to a place where I started, the chaplains I was working with, they started to like say shit and, you know, you'd like give you the look.
To your face or behind your back?
Well, towards the end, when I was getting ready to quit, they started saying it when I was in the room. Right. Mm-hmm. Like making reference to their sermons on Sunday about how God's love is for a man and a woman only.
Oh,
in front of me, right? Like, and with no,
ew.
They weren't saying it to me, but they were saying
it
in front of
me. It was a message.
100%.
Yeah.
And there was more of them that popped out during the time where the service was going to require them because of the gender and sexual diversity committee,
mm-hmm.
the steering committee. Had suggested that the chaplain sign letters of affirmation because some of them were from churches that have conversion therapy or that have had conversion therapy, instead of just firing these assholes. Like, so as the only queer person in the room,
yeah.
I'm just watching these people flounder and literally like show how bigoted they are.
Yeah.
Right?
That's hard to watch.
It was very hard. Yeah. And then, so I didn't give up. And then my dad passed away.
Right.
Right. And then I went to, it was a month after Dad passed away, I think. I want to say it was a month. It was maybe not that long. But I went to a chaplain thing. Mm-hmm. And it was on, this is going to, like, seriously, it kind of makes me laugh. But it was really shitty what they did. Like, so the chaplains put together a queer sensitivity training thing. And one of the straight chaplains presented it.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah. And so I'm the queer person in the room, and I'm just like, nobody fucking gets this.
No.
And so I didn't say anything because I'm like, you know what? Like,
well, that speaks enough
to the
situation.
Yeah, I was done that. Yeah. At that point, I was done, right? Yeah. Like, after they did that, and like, I actually sat through this, like, I sat through, I think, because morbid curiosity.
That's fair, yeah. Like, what do you have to say about this straight person?
Like, seriously, like, I want to learn.
Yeah.
Oh, so you don't know anything. That's basically what happened throughout the whole thing was,
yeah.
Oh, and if you see the box here, here, and here, and I'm just like, you know, you guys could ask me questions. Like,
that's a thing, too, when, like, men speak about how they think women experience the world as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I bet you it's worse. Honestly.
Well, I mean, yesterday was International Women's Day, and I get a text from a coworker, and they're trying to be supportive. Like, I know it was meant to be a nice gesture, but I couldn't even respond to it because I was so frustrated.
Mm.
They had said, like, Happy International Women's Day, and then they had said sent a quote. I don't remember the exact quote, but the message conveyed was, and I know almost directly said in the quote, was, this is a man's world, but women make it better.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's how we're celebrating International Women's Day. You totally missed the mark on that.
That's like the quote. That's like people going, oh, like, what about International Men's Day?
Yeah, right.
Jesus, man. And every day is International Men's Day, you morons.
I'm interested in your story, so I want you to keep talking, but I just related while you were mm-hmm. talking. I was like, oh, I feel that.
Yeah, I can't remember the story now. I got distracted.
That queer sensitivity training that a straight person
was doing. Yeah. That, well, the straight person obviously created and was instructing on.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, the person themselves, mm-hmm. I think, was probably trying to be supportive of me.
Yeah.
Right? I believe they were.
Like this colleague that was messaging me as well, they just don't get it.
Yeah. They don't understand how unsupportive it is, right?
Yes.
Like, to take on training about, you're doing like sensitivity training basically in front of the person you need to be sensitive to. Mm-hmm. And that is fucking awkward, especially when you're presenting something you do not know. Yes. You do not understand.
Like, yeah, then they're not credible. And yeah. then it,
but all the other chaplains thought, oh, it's great training. And I was like, I got to go. I got to go.
Reasonable. Yeah. I can see why you didn't stick around.
Right?
It's funny because while we were sitting here, I was looking at your nails and they look great.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very, like, the shape is great and the thank color, you. Like, it's fresh nail polish. I don't know, like, how often do you redo them?
I try to do it every month, but sometimes this one's probably a month and a half,
I think. It shellac? Or?
Yeah, I put shellac.
Oh, okay,
shellac
yeah, because I was, like, looking at mine and I don't use shellac just because my nails don't agree with it, mm-hmm. but I was like, oh, mine, like, don't look nearly as good as David's.
And they're my natural nails, right? But the shellac strengthens them. And
totally.
Yeah. Anyway, I like them. But yeah, that changed everything. All I had to do was be visibly queer. It was fine to know I was a queer person in the room.
Before that, yeah.
Before that, but other than, it was kind of like, takes me back to when I was younger, and people right. would say, like, if you're queer, just don't talk about it, right? When I went in the Army, mm-hmm. don't ask, don't tell. That was the policy.
I mean, the behavior from your coworkers or whomever you got the backlash from is saying the same thing, mm-hmm. which is where the virtue signaling is frustrating.
Yeah, very much so. And why they, like, you know, they're going to change. I think the service that I was working for is going to change the name of the chaplaincy program if they haven't already. I think they might have. But that's just virtue signaling. It's something, well, initially, I think I suggested compassionate care. And then they laughed.
They laughed.
Of course they did, because you can't have compassion and convert people at the same time. You can't do both things at the same time. But I do believe it does involve compassionate something, compassionate spiritual care or something like that. But either way, it's virtue signaling. It's just covering up the fact that those chaplains are still the same chaplains, and some of them still fucking work for churches that are involved in conversion therapy programs. They don't call it conversion therapy anymore. They just simply call it something else, like Genesis program.
Yeah, like relabeled like it.
Yep. Hmm. Yeah. And so obviously for me, I had to leave. Like I knew right away when they did the training, I was like, okay, this is just virtue signaling. This is all, none of this matters to them.
So, and when you're working in a place that doesn't align with your values, and especially as a volunteer too, when you're just there trying to like make a difference, mm-hmm. why would you stay? Like that... I wouldn't be able to.
Totally. And so why wouldn't I be mad leaving, right? Like after like treating me and like my whole community like just garbage.
Yeah.
And then pretending to people on the news that you're fucking sorry, right? Like
okay.
Yeah.
When you were working for the agency, what was the interactions with other like queer people within the service like officers or other civilian employees?
Oh, honestly, there was only like a couple of people that were openly queer.
Yeah,
like,
just only a few willing to even talk to
you. Oh yeah, right? I would say even not even a few, like a couple. Like a couple that I knew of.
Because like there are people within the service that are queer, but
100%, yeah.
If they acknowledge that in any way, whether it be visibly like with your mm-hmm. nails or whatever, or by finding a community, then that's it just frowned upon. So it's, again, a survival thing, not to
Totally. And I know that like for my whole life, that was my survival thing. So if you're enmeshed in that culture, matter of like coming out could be considered like death for a person, right? Yeah. Like it could be considered like I basically will just take my life instead, which is sad that queer kids grow up like that.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, it's sad that any kids grow up like that.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Some of the more marginalized communities, when kids grow up, they take that trauma with them, right? Like
absolutely.
And then you realize as an adult, where I interact with people, try to interact in a kind way, and you just find out that people just aren't kind. Like, right? Like they're
I
just
laugh
not.
Just because people aren't.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Especially if they don't agree with what you're doing or who you are. Like they become really unkind really quick.
Yeah. I experienced that this past year. Like I lost a lot of friends because I saw who they were as people and they were just unkind people.
Yeah.
And there were people that I had been close with like all throughout my career and something happened that I don't want to get into, but they didn't agree with it. But no one even asked me about it. Mm-hmm. And then they just decided to be unkind to me. And I was like, okay, well.
They made up their mind about it, whatever it was.
Whatever it was, without really consulting anybody other than like maybe hearing like a rumor and being like, okay, like I'm going to change the way I treat this person now. So,
that's a shame.
Yeah, it was not ideal. That contributed to the stress leave as well because I was like pretty upset with some people that I had felt mm-hmm. close to.
Well, it's a
betrayal. Really let down by them, mm-hmm. but.
Yeah. Well, and that's the unfortunate part about it, right? Like, and then when I left the service, like I sent some messages to some people that I thought were like friends. No. Yeah. No responses. Like.
Just ghosted, hey?
Yeah. Which is, I get it. Like, I get it. Because part of me leaving was like a big, like an F you to some people who, it was kind of an F you to some people, right? And I think the people that felt the F you were, it was like a collateral damage. Some of the people that felt it were just close to these people, I think. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I just started to realize I was supporting the wrong team, right? That's what I realized. I was supporting the wrong team, man. I was on team bad guys. Like, you know what I mean? Not that law enforcement's bad, but I wasn't on team bad guys in general.
Yeah, it didn't align with your values and who you are as a person. And if you were getting treated poorly, yeah. like, yeah.
Well, and I've watched too many other people get treated poorly, right? Like,
so many people, yeah.
Watched nothing get done, like, and watch them, you know, like, just go through so much trauma for that service, right? Like, and just nothing at the end of the day, you mm-hmm. know, like, everything comes down to their choice, their poor choices as opposed to the good ones. The million of good ones they made.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Right? If you make one mistake, everyone will remember that for the rest of your career. Yeah. But all the good stuff you do, no one even really celebrates it. Like,
no.
Like, yeah, there's like awards for like specific things and stuff. And again, I just don't want to like out the agency that I work for, but,
I always find those things like window dressing too, though.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
You're
grooming people.
Well, yeah, and like it ends up just being like the kind of the old white man club, just like slapping each other's asses type yeah. of thing. Like, and it's saying that, like, I did get a few awards last year, but the thing is, it's like you can't even really celebrate it. Like, if you tell people that you got one, depending on like the context of it, like people just say negative
mm-hmm.
stuff. So it's like, I don't feel like it's a safe place to celebrate any successes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, once you make any sort of mistake, that's just now your identity in other people's eyes.
Yeah. Which is wild, right?
Yeah.
Because because obviously in every occupation, every human makes mistakes.
Yes, because right? we are humans.
Because we're humans and we don't always know. By nature of
that, you make mistakes. Like, it is what it is. So then we get all these, like, people with such high anxiety trying to be a perfectionist to not make mm-hmm. a mistake because it's not a safe place to do any sort of even mild failure.
Yep.
And then, yeah, we wonder why these people are so like tightly wound and needing to cope with alcohol or mm-hmm. needing to take time off work because they just snap mm-hmm. their crayons at some point because of the pressure they've been putting on themselves as a result of the pressure from the environment that mm-hmm. they're in and trying to excel in, right?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I went through a thing kind of the last 6 months where, like, at one point I was super angry.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's still stuff that, like, I'm not angry in a way where it, like, has any power over me now. Mm-hmm. But because my attitude that I considered my options. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that we may have been talking about it before the recording. But I took, like, a brief stress leave and then I kind of looked at, okay, what are my options? I can, like, change my work area mm-hmm. within where I work. I can, like, quit the profession, or I could work at a different agency. I don't think that working at a different agency would fix anything. But by nature of that, I don't think a different work area within the agency fixes anything either.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, well, I could just quit this entirely, or I can find a way to make this a better, safer place for, like, women and new people mm-hmm. or people in marginalized groups. Like, mm-hmm. so I kind of wrapped my head around that being the thing I was going to do. And I'm still open to, like, not being a police officer if it mm-hmm. doesn't align with my values, or if, you know, it's bad for my mental health. But I feel I'm in a place where, like, I can make a difference for other mm-hmm. people. So that's what I'm going to put my energy into for a while and mm-hmm. see what happens in the future. But I just couldn't be angry anymore because it was just draining me and affecting me, right? Yeah. Like, I was losing as a result of that. And, I mean, it's also a human thing that I had to go through mm-hmm. and a bit of a grieving, too, because it's like, I had some things on a pedestal to some degree, and I didn't think I did,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really think I was someone that had the, like, rose-colored glasses, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we all did.
Yeah, so then it's disheartening when you, like, make these realizations, but, yeah, that's just what I ended on, and I've kind mm-hmm. of, like, always circled back to that, like, trying to find out way to make the world better for other people through like my experiences that I've had ever since I went to treatment for alcoholism when I was like a 15-year-old. It's funny because it's like, I don't even know if you can really say a 15-year-old has alcoholism, but that is what my treatment center told me that I had. I just don't think I had any coping skills at all.
I think that's what most kids find out.
And I mean, I don't drink now just because I don't think that it adds anything productive to my life. I think alcohol's dangerous and poisonous, but it's wild that it's so socially acceptable. But anyways, going on a bit of a tangent now, but yeah, like that's just always what I've circled back to is like, how can I use my experience to make something better for somebody else?
And that's, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate that you're trying to like stick it out, right? Where, and because, you know, like at some point I do hope people stand up and just stop doing the goddamn job, because I think that's what it's going to take for real change to happen is when, when people just are like, you know what? I am not kicking that person out of there again. I am not going to do that. That person is fucking warm in there, right? It's going to take people to keep doing that over and over. I'm not even saying I was that person, like, because I was susceptible to the people around me when I was in law enforcement, and obviously susceptible, not to the point where I was doing anything illegal, but susceptible enough to just fall in line, right? To fall in line, to do whatever it was that we were told was right, right? And and what our job was, and just do our job.
Thing too, basically. Is like when businesses call and want police to kick somebody out, it's like, well, depending on circumstances, like the business does have the right to do that. If it's super cold out, I just don't think it's humane. And like, maybe like, I mean, I try to look for another option, but yeah, not everybody thinks about it that way.
Yeah. That's because not everybody thinks about it like those are people.
I was just going to say that 100% that homeless people are not people in the eyes of some of my colleagues. And that's so unfortunate because
It's so terrible.
And those people that are taking like the Percocets and like opiates and stuff for their backs could easily end up being those homeless people, because if you talk to them, a lot of their stories are, oh, I was in a car accident and I started taking pain meds for my back and now I'm addicted and I'm homeless. So it's like, buddy that I work with in the police car that's taking those meds could end up being that dude in the future. So people just don't see the humanity behind it, which I guess makes me grateful for my experiences early on in my life, because I do see every person as a person and a product of the circumstances in their lives, which they're not always responsible for. And oftentimes like trauma, the intergenerational or whatnot, like people are, everyone's just surviving at the end of the day, right? And it looks different for different people.
Well, it's like you were saying, within even within the different services, like women are like, can't, they're not all going to be the same. There's going to be that lateral violence. Like, it's just impossible for all of us to kind of come up with the same ideas at the same time, I think. Like, the same ideas that might be helpful, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Because I'm sure that, like, the ladies that participate in the misogyny and to keep themselves safe, like, that eventually has to stop, right? Like, in order for it to change.
And in hindsight, like, I've done it. So I'm not saying that, like, I'm perfect by any means. But
I'm not suggesting that,
be mindful, right? And then if I catch myself doing it, not do any of those behaviors going forward to the best of my ability, right?
I would think it's pretty tough because,
it is,
you know, because I have built in now. I have built in, like, my brain has a built-in system for hiding me. Like, so sometimes if I'm not aware, it'll start trying to hide me again.
Right.
Just because it's safer.
Yeah.
And it always is. And I imagine in law enforcement, as a female, as a visible minority, as a marginalized human of any kind, like, to disappear within that culture is probably the most desired effect.
And it's easy to do that while you're wearing a uniform.
Yeah. That's right.
Because you just, you know, look like everybody else. So.
And if you're used to doing that, that's what a person's going to do until they stop. Yeah, I was, we'll wrap it up here because I know, like, because it seems like the energy is kind of like pulled out of the room because we talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, thank you for that. Like, thank you very much. It's because it's been a strange year, right? Since for dad passed and since leaving the, like, different institutions, police being one of them, and just being away from that, it's just so much. The world looks so different.
Is it refreshing?
Oh my God, yeah. It's so refreshing.
Yeah.
It looks so different. And you don't know it until you're out of it again. So this was going back to something you said. It's really hard to see it when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like I couldn't until some things started to happen that kind of jarred me to see it. But if those things didn't happen, I might not have seen it.
Totally. And I saw way more when I was off work, like just having any space for it. I was like, oh, there's lots of stuff going on that's not okay.
Yeah. Like lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that last couple of years of working with them with the service here, that was really like probably 2 years too long for my soul. Right. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
But I wanted to be sure. Like I wanted to be sure that what I was feeling was real. Cause I really, when I went to work there, I don't know if you ever knew this, but I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but like years ago, I turned in some police officers, like in terms of they were doing some shady shit. So, and I wasn't there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, someone told me this, that was there. And I told them not to tell me. Like I actually went through the whole thing and I said, please don't fucking tell me anymore. I don't want to do anything about it. And they're like, oh, fuck, you can't do nothing about it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. And so I did. And the reality is none of them really got punished, obviously.
I believe that.
Yeah, because it was back in the old days where they were literally following instructions of their commanders, right? Like, and and so they got displaced, but that was about it. But that's what they used to do back in the day, right? They would get displaced. They'd get put somewhere where they couldn't, like, impact the public for a while.
Yeah, totally. They just hide them somewhere.
Yeah, hide them. Because you got to move your broken toys, just like the Catholic Church did, right? They moved their priests. And, but then I got used to that. I can't remember how I got on the subject. What was I talking about?
Staying at the service 2 years too long and like where you started.
Yeah, I came back. That's right. I came back because of those events that happened. I was like, okay, if I'm going to like complain about it and I'm going to turn them in and go through it, I'll go ahead and I'll go back and work with them in a supportive role because maybe that will help. Right? Maybe people being out there with them to talk to will keep them from exploding on the public.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Just is impossible. Mm. Right? I think it got worse. I think somehow moving a bunch of chaplains into the vehicles has reinforced it somehow.
Really?
Yeah, because I think the chaplains, we were all told, like, you don't tell them what to do. You just listen to them.
Right.
And so whenever you're told you can't, like, kind of talk back a little bit, it's very sick,
that.
Right?
Yeah, I see exactly where you're going with that.
Because and partially we were told that because cops won't talk to you if you do that, right? And it's like, fair enough. But at some point, we have to be able to say, that's bullshit.
Well, and right? Just like have a conversation with people. Like,
it's
unreasonable to just agree with somebody else all the time.
Oh my God. And I mean, I wouldn't, right? Like, I just wouldn't, but I would just be like, I don't see it that way. That was my common response was, I just can't see it that way. But when people would say things like, you know, they would call the houseless like hobos and stuff like that, I was pretty quick to be like, that's kind of like lame, isn't
it? And that's pretty common speak. Like, I think most of my coworkers would refer to like an unhoused person as a hobo or whatever other word.
Yeah, but anything but like an unhoused human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't hear that very much.
No, you don't. Now, unless you come and work down here with me, then you'll hear it all the time. And human is a consistent word we use.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's that's what I mean. There's so much light. That's what we're talking about. The light. Once you get away from it, like you started seeing more of it when you were on your leave. Imagine if you gave yourself a year of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'd be like potentially a different human, right? Like, yeah, and maybe one who like dyes their hair in the sun and like braids their hair and does like goes around like singing Kumbaya. Probably not.
Who knows?
You never know. Well, so thank you. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I don't want to keep you any longer.
Not really. I think that I didn't really know what I wanted to talk about when I got down here. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, I'll just kind of see where the conversation goes. And I think the conversation went where it needed to go. Hopefully, I hope somebody can get something out of this podcast.
So. Well, I think so. And I know so because there's probably members out there too that listen. You know what I mean? Like that. Maybe there's just more people that will start talking about what happens to them as being just a woman on the job, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because when the public thinks about it, they probably don't understand just how hard it is.
No.
Right?
No, there's no way.
And I mean, especially if they believe the window dressing.
And then, like, kind of fairly, because, like, obviously a police officer should be held to a high standard, but no, like, the public does not understand what it is like to be a police officer.
Yeah, and to work within that, inside that system, right? Yeah. Like, whatever agency it is, they are literally all the same.
Yeah, and I didn't understand when I was a civilian employee, so I even, like, worked in the culture to some degree, and I didn't know.
Yeah. You know what I thought about? Like, and this has just popped on my head, like, as I was thinking about you coming on. I was thinking about how we get groomed to be ready to be a police officer as soon as we start doing like security work, and then we start doing law enforcement, and then we, you know what
all
I mean?
Those
like
groups,
all those different employments are grooming us to handle
loss prevention.
Loss, that was the one, loss prevention. Cause it's all grooming, right? Cause you're interacting with police officers and they are your superiors basically because they have all the power, whether you're charging, whether you're not, like,
100%.
And it's interesting because I thought about, I'm like, that's why by the time most of us would become a police officer following that path, we'd be 100% willing just to be
bought
in. Yeah, we've already bought into the toxic nature of it, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. What a fucking twisted culture, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it sure is.
So. Fucking wild. Well, you take care of yourself.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don't take any shit from those fuckers.
Okay. Yeah, I won't. Right on.